So this is the method of fractional steps applied to shallow water equation revisited, and I have to express my gratitude to the colleague Kadouri, Monique Tambay, Jean Côté, you know, for their help and for having brought this meeting to my attention. Method of fractional steps rapidly. I'm coming from plasma physics community and speaking to a distinguished audience of physicists. Rapidly, you know, if we have an equation of this form, we can split it and solve it, you know, in one direction in X and then in Y and then in X again. And if we center in time and we follow some indications, you know, in the method of fractional steps of Fianenko, which is a classic book and some plenty of literature on how to split equations and solve them, we can get a scheme, you know, which would be of second order in delta T square in accuracy. Now, when you write the equation in this form, all what you have to do now, instead of solving a multidimensional problem, you have to solve in each direction a one-dimensional problem, which is solved simply by shifting along the characteristics and calculating the shift using a cubic spline interpolation. Now, I am coming from a plasma physics community. This is an equation. We are not cheating you. We applied this method in our community. This is an equation called the Vlasov equation, which is one of the basic equations in plasma physics, describing the collective modes in plasma physics. And if you take this equation with one dimensional in y, we have here three dimensional in velocity, but just, you know, remove two of these, you know, and keep one dimensional in velocity, one dimensional in space, coupled to a Poisson equation. For the last 40 years, you know, all kind of methods applied in numerical simulation have been applied to this equation in all major labs around the world. Fourier transform methods have been used. Transforming in velocity space using Hermite polynomial expansion, Tsebyshev polynomials, you name it, finite element methods. The method which is used nowadays and which gave the best, you know, of the results is a fractional step method in which you fraction the equation the same thing, the same way I showed you, and you know, solve in every direction the hyperbolic terms using the fractional steps and shifting along the characteristic using a cubic spline interpolation. This is what is used today. Now, I'm going to show you what we mean accuracy. We need accuracy in plasma physics, and we can tolerate very little diffusion, for example, numerical diffusion, because it creates artificially charge and currents which completely spoil and flow the physics. And I'm going to give you an idea, you know, what we mean by accuracy in plasma physics. This is, for example, the oscillation at the edge of a plasma using an equation of this form to calculate the oscillation of a charge at the edge of the plasma, which is the difference between electron and ion density, you know, which oscillates. And this oscillation, the electrons and ions, you know, have essentially the same density, but you know how close are the densities. This oscillation are caused by charge separation, which I'm showing you here, which is of the order of 10 to the minus 3. So we are calculating here, we are following during hundreds of dozens of oscillations, this oscillation which is of order of 10 to the minus 3 at the edge of the plasma, and it's very accurately done by this method. Now I applied a method, you know, which is, I didn't know, you know, people are going to talk about the CIP method. I do not have results of the CIP method here. It's published in Computer Physics Communication last year by Pon Shukri in 2001. We did apply the Japanese CIP method to this equation. And the Japanese CIP method would require deriving a time derivative equation for each of the variables you have here. So we have four, you know, for each of the derivatives we have here. We have four derivatives, so we add to this equation four other equations. You know, this makes five equations to be solved, plus mixed derivatives to be calculated to solve for this problem. So it's huge. And we followed this solution with a code, you know, which was 5 or 10 times slower, and we had difficulty. You know, the charge we produced by this by this method, we have difficulty reproducing this charge. The results are published in computer physics communication. The charge was distorted. You know, it was close, you know, but distorted. So we have difficulty, you know, getting this accuracy, you know. So when you apply it, you know, to weather forecast problems, you can get 11 degrees instead of 10 degrees, you know. But when we are calculating a charge of the order of 10 to the minus 3, this huge amount of computation contains some numerical diffusion, you know, which is not accurate enough to give us the solution we want. So the method I am showing you, you know, is a very simple method and a very powerful method, very accurate, to solve, you know, differential equation of the parabolic type. Now, we go to the shallow water equation, and it has been pointed out some times ago by Yakimin and Robert. Now, I am citing, you know, Monthly Weather Review, that this method of fractional step for the numerical solution of shallow water equation can reduce the multidimensional matrix inversion problem into one-dimensional series of one-dimensional problem, and the technique is simple, attractive, provided it is accurate and stable. And this is the paper by Yakimiv and Robert, you know, and this is what they say, you know, to reduce the multidimensional, they studied a Crank-Nicholson scheme, which is followed by a method of fractional step, and thus having eliminated one of the major drawbacks of the Fermi implicit scheme, the technique indeed becomes very attractive and very simple to apply to multi-level primitive equation, provided it is stable and accurate. Now, they studied, you know, the stability of the scheme using linear analysis of the equations, and their conclusion after studying this is that the scheme, you know, the advection test, the numerical scheme proposed by Kohn gives a rather poor performance in forecasting the slow-moving phase web speed. This is really unfortunate, they say, because the scheme contains some rather appealing elements. One can only hope that someone will find a different way of applying a fractional step technique, or that someone will find a corrector that will cancel the large error. So what I am proposing to you today is a solution of a problem which was proposed almost as a challenge some 16 years ago in the Monthly Weather Review. And I'm going to show you the solution. Now, we are going to apply the fractional step technique the way we presented it by writing the equation in terms of what we call Riemann invariants, which are invariant around characteristics associated with cubic spline interpolation. We are testing the method, you know, on advection method. The linear analysis of the method of the equation done, you know, in collaboration with the colleagues, you know, especially Monique Tonguay from the shows that the method is unconditionally stable, reproduces exactly the frequency of the slow mode, and that the fast modes were exact to an order O delta T square. So I'm going to show you these results. And first, you know, rapidly, you know, a fractional step technique applied to, this should be a very simple test, you know, applied to the rotation of a cylindrical, of an exponential cone, and you can take this equation, and with this velocity field, we can integrate, you know, these equations to calculate the displacement. So once you calculate the displacement, this is done analytically, we can either do a two-dimensional interpolation knowing the displacement, or we can split this equation and do it the way I showed you without having to calculate the displacement and shift, you know, in X and Y. And the result is essentially the same. The initial value, you know, of a steep exponential cone, and after rotating it, we can do it either by the fractional step method, and this is what we get here, or you can do it using the two-dimensional interpolation, and we get essentially the same results, almost the same results. The two-dimensional interpolation was about 10% slower, or about 15% slower, but this is due to the fact that we knew initially the analytical solution of the displacement. This is something we were able to calculate. You are usually interested in mass conservation. If we integrate this volume, you know, over the domain, it's surprising, it's not very clear here, but the cubic spline with the fractional step method, we're able to keep, you know, this thing, although there is some some, you know, some distortion of the peak, the cubic spline were able to keep this volume up to the seventh decimal. You know, why? I don't know. The two-dimensional interpolation did it, you know, up to second or third decimal. Now we did the same thing, you know, with the Japanese method, a version called RCIP, you know, and for this simple problem, it produced essentially some results, except that it was about five times slower than the fractional step method. Now, what will happen, you know, if we don't know how to calculate analytically the displacement? And this is a paper again by Robert, in which the displacement is simply calculated using an iteration in which you calculate the displacement, and then once you calculate the displacement by these steps, and you can do it in three dimension if you have a three dimension, and you take these two values, and then you do a two-dimensional interpolations to calculate to advance the equation in time. Now you see immediately that this equation, if you can split it and integrate it, you know, successively on x and y, and we have a source term, we will see how to handle it. If you can do that, you know, you save an important operation here, and instead of doing a two or three dimensional interpolation here, you do a series of one dimensional interpolation. Now, I will show you this immediately apply to the shallow water equations. And this is the shallow water equations in one dimension, and the idea is to rewrite this equation in terms of these variables, which are called Riemann invariants, which are invariant around this characteristic. If you substitute by these values here, you recover these two equations. Writing, and this is invariant along this characteristic, you just have to invest to advance in time using a cubic spline interpolation, which we have been using, and it works, you know, and it works as with as much precise as it works with the Vlasov equation. This is, for example, a problem of the breaking of a dam. You know, we had an initial water discontinuity here, and we removed the dam, you know, and you get a shockwave which is propagating. Now, when we go to two dimensions, these are the equations created by Yakimiv and Robert. And in these equations, if you split them, and you rearrange the term, you get, you know, you split them first in x and then in y, and if you rearrange the terms, you recover again these equations, which are the one-dimensional equation plus an equation for v. And if you rewrite these equations in terms of the Riemann invariant, you end up, you know, having an equation of this form, and all what you have to do to advance the equation in time in x is to do the along the characteristic, the interpolation using a cubic spline along the characteristic for three equations, one, two, three. And then you go to y and you repeat the same thing. And you do not have to solve a Helmholtz equation at all, and it's accurate, and it's stable, and it works. Now, as I told you, the linear analysis showed that the method was unconditionally stable, the numerical frequency of the slow mode was exact, and the numerical frequency of the rapid mode were accurate to an order delta t square. This is a variance of this equation studied by Thomas and Côté, and we have here this Coriolis term. So when you have a source term, the splitting is done simply by removing first the source term. So you start with the equation equal to zero, you split them in x and y, you advance delta t over 2 in x and y, then you go to the source term. You can solve the source term by any method you want, you know, which could be stable, a Runge-Kutta method or any method, and then you come back and you repeat delta x and delta y for the t over 2. You center always in time, you know, to make sure that you always get a second order accuracy, and this is what you get here for these problems, for example. This is the x, you know, and you write the equation in terms of the Riemann invariant, and then this is the y, you rewrite the equation in terms of the Riemann invariant, so you advance this equation, this one and this one, for delta t over 2, you repeat for this one and this one, for delta t over, and this one, for delta t over 2, and then you go to the source term, and in this case, the source term we had can be simply integrated for phi, you know, giving an exponential. The divergence can simply be calculated by cubic spline, and then you go to the Coriolis term, and these two terms can combine to give you sine and cosine solution, which are very stable, you know, for any arbitrary delta t. And the code works very nicely without having to solve Helmholtz equation. This is, for example, a perturbation of magnitude 0.2, which I have put on a geopotential corresponding to a height of 5,000 meter, and I let this run, you know, and the perturbation should decay. I am fixing the geopotential equal constant at the boundary, and U and V equal zero at the boundary, so the perturbation evolves, and the code goes back to the equilibrium, which is flat, and during this evolution, you get all kind of very beautiful geometric figures, which you have done. So this is done on 100 times 100 kilometer with 200 grid points in each direction. It's keeping very, very nicely the initial symmetry. The code evolves, you know, creating all kind of geometric figures going from circle to squares and back to circles, until and finally, you know, the perturbations decays and disappears, keeping, you know, for sufficiently for until the end, you know, keeping very nicely the symmetry of the initial perturbation. Now, a next step, you know, to make the equation a little bit more complicated was to study the to look to the equation of El Niño variability, which are similar to what we have seen, adding you know a temperature equations to the a temperature equations to the other equations, and the source terms were source terms are proportional to difference between temperature and ambient temperature, between temperature and the atmosphere, or the temperature and the thermocline. And this is done by the same, I mean, it makes no difficulty to put any source term you want. And the source term is not the problem. The advection term is the, and the solution is done the same way. And this is, for example, the case of a constant thermocline in which we are putting wind in these directions, and this wind, you know, would drive the flow in the from west to east. So you can see the solution of the equation here. This is done with a time step, for example, of 15 minutes. The important things here, I have constant wind. The thing was essentially to test the numerics, you know, rather than the physics. I have 400 points here over a distance of 12,000 kilometers, and 200 points here over a distance of 2,400 kilometers, and with the friction factor, you know, pushing from west to east, I get a velocity building up in 41 days. This takes about half an hour or three quarter of an hour on my workstation. Giving after 41 days and a time step of about 15 minutes a peak velocity of about 0.3 meter per second, you know, and this is the flow. The flow in V was small, and the temperature, you know, cooled from going from west to east, and the flow field. This is the flow, you know, appearing after a period of 41 days. Now, this is a work which is under development. If we can look to the equations, if we can look to the equations in three dimension, I took the equations of Tongay, Robert, and Laprise. Written in a Cartesian form, in this form, and if we take this set of equations, it's written here again in details, and this in this Cartesian form, you know, it's immediately easy to split it. This is a work which is under progress. You take the equations in the x directions, And you saw that when you write them in the X direction, you have immediately this shift along the characteristics, which can be done. And you couple these two equations, and these two equations are solved by shifts written this way. So all what you have to do is series of shift in the X directions, followed by series of shift in the Y direction. You see, you do the same thing in the Y direction and in the Z directions. You do in every direction for delta T over 2, and then you push, you take the source term, and you combine these terms. You know, these terms can give you sine and cosine. They are very stable. If you have a friction term, they can be solved, you know, using a semi-implicit method. I mean, the source term wouldn't make a difficulty, you know, solving. And then you go back and you repeat the shift for delta T over 2, and this gives you a scheme which should be to an order of delta T square correct according to the mathematical rules of Yarenko, you know, when you split the equations. And this solution is done without having to go through a Helmholtz equation. So that's, yeah. This is a work which is in progress, you know, and we are going to look to these problems in detail, you know, in the coming weeks with our colleagues. What I can tell you, you know, is that applying these methods to problem of plasma physics, you know, we are having very good results, you know, as far as conservation of density, of energy, of it is the method par excellence today to solve Vlasov equation and get good conservation of energy, you know, and good conservation of density, and we are getting very good results. So I am confident, you know, that in the coming weeks, you know, we are going to put close look on this, you know, but at least as far as answering the question of Robert and Yakimiv, you know, some 16 years ago, you know, to see a scheme, you know, which could be, which could give accurate exact solution of the slow mode, you know, and could be a fractional step type. I think we are answering this question, you know. I would say, you know, from this result, the results are accurate. You know, I varied delta T, I varied delta X. You know, I'm getting, you know, the code converges very nicely. But we are going to have a more, you know, a more close look to all this, you know, during the coming weeks.
Well, just a short comment. This scheme is kind of new, and
we did not have to put any numerical diffusion. I mean, we yeah. You see, I will tell you that in the problem we did for the rotation of a cone, the mass conservation for the splitting was much, much better, you know, than the other methods. I was getting a conservation, integrating over the volume, I was getting a conservation to the sixth decimal. You know, it's surprising. I don't know what are these for, in spite of the fact that we had some deformation of the peak and some oscillation appearing because there is very low numerical diffusion in the code, the volume was up to the sixth decimal. You know, what are the properties, or even seventh decimal, what are the properties associated with this fractional step in spline? I don't know, but they work very well. Yeah. I showed you a perturbation, you know, done of 0.2, done on a geopotential of 5,000 meter, in which the symmetry was conserved, you know, running the code, it conserves the symmetry of the solution at the end, you know, that the solution was damped, you know, up to a level, you know, of point something, and the symmetry, you know, of the solution was exact, was very nicely conserved. I showed you this solution, you know, which was done. Now, it depends, 10 years ago, what kind of interpolation scheme did you use, you know. We used, for these methods, you know, in laws of codes, and in this method, we used flux, for example, method for conservation. They are very bad, you know. Transform methods, they didn't give good results. It depends what we are doing with this cubic spline, you know, we are, you know, running the codes, you know, and getting very, very nice properties of conservation. And the symmetry, you know, which was conserved here, which I showed you, was very nicely conserved. And the symmetry, the figures, you know, geometric figures going from circle to square to circles to, it was very, very nicely conserved. Yes? But, you know, I showed you the El Nino variability. You know, you can put any kind of source term you want. You know, the problem is not in the source term. You can always find some nice scheme, you know, Runge-Kutta method or some implicit scheme to solve the source term. The important part, you know, is the advection term which you split and you solve, you know, along the characteristics. And you do it with this cubic spline, you know. It's simple cubic spline in which you write that the function, the derivative, and the second derivative are continuous, and you get a cubic spline which we are using. Now, the Japanese, for example, in the CIP method, they add a constant with a condition of continuity of flux, and then they study some square pulse which is propagating. We saw this publication in Journal of Computational Physics and Monthly Weather Review, and it gives you a very nice pulse propagating. But the pulse is nicely propagating because the velocity of the pulse is done, if the test is done with a constant velocity, and when you have a constant velocity, it conserves the flux. But what if you have a velocity field, you know, which is varying from grid point to grid point, and you apply at the grid point a condition of of the continuity of the flux? You have here a grid point, I minus 1, I, and I plus 1, okay? And you have a velocity field, UI, you know? So you have UI here, and UI plus 1 here. And what you come and you say here, you know, we have a continuous flux. So they say that UI, you see, they say that UI delta T, and here, you see, UI delta T are equal, okay? That's very nice. But UI, you know, here, is varying between UI and UI minus 1, and UI here is varying between UI and UI plus 1. So we are putting it equal here, when in fact it's varying around the... So you are putting an approximation on the flux, you know, which with variable velocity, you know, is not correct. With constant velocity is correct, and the pulse is propagating very nicely and give a very nice conservation scheme. But when you do it, you know, with the velocity field which is varying from grid point, it introduces some numerical diffusion, and this is what we saw, you know, when we applied to our method. Fine. I mean, our work has been published in Computer Physics Communication last year. And I showed you the solution. If you can do better, you know, these equations are simple four-dimensional equations, which could appear straightforward to apply your solution, and we did it. And we show our results. Now, if you can take this problem, you know, and show us that you can do better, that would be nice, you know. But there is some numerical diffusion associated with your method, which when gives the temperature from 10 to 11 degrees with nice curves, it won't hurt you. But when it calculated the charge to the order of 10 to the minus 3, it was not able to do it. Plus the complexity of the method, you know, we had to go through 5 equations, you know, to derive all this, you know. You can do it with a single equation, you know, and the cubic spline interpolation, simple cubic spline.